Hello, and welcome to episode 65 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We are here today with Brian Karam, executive editor of the Sentinel newspapers in Montgomery County and Prince George's County, Maryland. How are you doing today, Brian?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing?
Excellent. So the first thing I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, my vast interests center around the First Amendment, making sure there's freedom of access to information from government entities to the public. So I serve on a number of committees with the Maryland Delaware District of Columbia Press Association. I sit on their board. I've lobbied state legislatures and local governments and Congress for expanding First Amendment protection for reporters. Currently involved with a group we call ourselves the First Jailbirds Club. We're the only 14 people alive on the planet who've actually gone to jail to support free press. We had all had confidential sources we protected. And so we're currently trying to put together a national shield law to protect reporters. I also have a little personal project I've been working on, and that's busting up the large media monopolies. I think it's approximately six or seven companies own about 90% of the media that you see, read, and hear. And I think there needs to be greater competition, particularly in this day and age. And we need to be ever vigilant of government. We live in very precarious times where, as, and I quote, one of my friends in the First Amendment realm said, if you've ever wanted to be a crooked politician, today is the perfect day to be one because there's so few reporters left.
So in terms of the Jailbirds Club, which sounds rather interesting, you say
you're we drink heavily.
You're only one of 14 journalists in the world or in the country who's
There's only First Amendment privileges in this country. So yeah, it's 14 people in this country have gone to jail to protect the First Amendment.
So individuals in other countries who try to protect free speech and gone to prison.
They're usually shot or killed. we have protections here that we haven't been shot or killed yet, but, you know, I guess we'll wait till January after the inauguration to see how that goes. Currently, it's just jailing us.
Can you speak a little bit about what led to you being incarcerated for, as you say, advancing
I had a confidential source in a murder case that did not want to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to jail to protect that source. And I was jailed four times. Mm-hmm. And that ended up going up to the Supreme Court before they told me that they weren't going to protect me.
Interesting. And was the source ever revealed?
After she left, that's how I got out of jail the fourth time. I was, I think it was jailed about four or five weeks that last time. And when she got out of the house where she was being threatened and she moved to California from Texas, she came forward.
And that was what released you?
Yeah.
So why is it that a free press is so important, and why is it that you have advocated for greater strength in adherence to the First Amendment, or what are the threats to the First Amendment? So first question is, why is free speech important and freedom of
Well, it boils down to demagoguery, fascism, and the kind of government you want. If you don't have a free press, you can either have, what was it, Thomas Jefferson said, you can either have a good press or a bad press, but without free speech, I guarantee the latter. He also said that about government. You can have a good government or bad government, but without a free press, you're going to have bad government. The biggest problem is that without a free press, the public's right to know is diminished. And the public needs to know what its government is doing. We're the government of, by, and for the people. And our primary reason for existence is to hold politicians' feet to the fire and make sure they adhere to constitutional state and local laws in governing the masses. And it's one thing that we've done well over the years. It's not something that we're doing extremely well now because the numbers are small. Mm-hmm. And people seem to care more about Kardashians and Biebers than they do about real news. And that's why you have a proliferation of fake news. It's a lot easier to fake the news than it is to go out and get the news, and people buy that.
So I'm sure you would agree that a lot of money is spent on political campaigns in this day and age. And that money is often spent on communications with the public. So right now there's a lot of information coming from politicians going to the public. Why is that information different than information that an institution such as the Sentinel newspapers might provide to the public?
Well, it should be obvious that we're a disinterested third-party observer. We have no axe to grind. We merely want to provide facts and let our readers make judgments for themselves. Every time the government issues you information via the government, there's a taint to it, and that taint is the taint of government. You think the government's going to want to come out and say, hey, we did bad? No. So they're going to present, they're going to spin things in the best light for them. We should not adhere to public relations experts, public information officers, or spin control. We should be here to provide vetted factual information that people can trust in order to make decisions about their lives.
Now, I'd like to ask you about, since you mentioned government-funded press, we do have national public radio, public broadcasting systems. We do have C-SPAN. The British have the British Broadcasting Corporation. There are a number of...
Who cares about the Brits? We're talking about the U.S. If you're trying to say that we have government-sponsored radio, some of the budget from NPR is, but not 100% of it, is via the government. So there's really no, you can't draw any direct comparison.
Is there a problem with that, though?
There's a problem with not enough press, free and independent press. That's the problem. If whatever is spent on NPR, if you want to cut their budget, they're one of the last few entities that are providing an independent view, although sometimes I think they're a little kooky. But, I mean, they're certainly not in the hip pocket of government. Where you have a problem, or governments want to, like the county here, try to pass a law, a state law, that they would provide the Montgomery County.
Tried to pass a county law.
No, they tried to, their county delegation tried to pass a state law. It was introduced last year so that counties can provide direct information on their websites to to people in the county and bypass the process of having an independent press vet the information, and that's wrong. That's the problem. When government decides that they can be our voice and our ears, we got a problem with that.
So let's delve a little bit into that, a little bit deeper into that particular example. So you said, so for our listeners, Mr. Karam referred to a county delegation, which refers to 24 state delegates and 8 state senators who currently represent 8 separate districts in Montgomery County, Maryland, in the Maryland General Assembly.
Right.
So those 32 individuals...
It was not even those 32 individuals. It was presented by the delegation to the state in order that some of the advertising that is vetted through the Sentinel and other newspapers, like wills and... public notices, all of those notices that are presented via our paper and is done quite well, they were trying to save money and just do it online. And so completely bypassing people who don't go online, people who don't trust the government, and there was a lot of problems with it, and it failed, and it never got out of committee. It was killed in committee, and that's a good thing. You need to have an independent press. And look, we're all, you know, you talk about NPR, all of us get money somehow for the government, whether it's government ads or it's the government giving us a budget, but that's not the issue. You're missing the bigger picture. The bigger picture is having a voice that's not in the government providing you information on the government.
So is there a problem? Is press not as free today as it was in the past?
It's not even as free today as it was last week. You've got the president-elect of the United States calling us the wicked press and the crooked press and feeding fanning the fire of people who think that we're disreputable, when in fact it's obfuscation and it's trying to shut down an independent press. The independent press in the United States has never been more in danger than it is today, ever, in the history of the republic. And the president-elect of the United States is probably the most dangerous person in this republic since the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. It's
it's that dangerous, it's that serious, and it's he's not an aberration of the system, he's a culmination, he's the epitome of it. It started with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s when they decided to remove the rules of ownership that you know different companies could have for properties in the media. So all the media entities began buying themselves up. They created a monopoly. They got rid of the fairness doctrine. They got rid of any kind of oversight on the press. They bought each other up. This garbage about the liberal press is a red herring. It's baloney. The simple fact of the matter is these large corporations that own most of the media today give freely to the left and to the right. No one benefited more from press during this last presidential election than the president-elect, Donald Trump, mm-hmm. who got oodles of free $1 billion worth of free advertising. The president of the CBS said he's good for business.
Should the press have limited their coverage of that?
No, the press should have better coverage. It's not limited. It's the type of coverage that you have. If you have kids that are getting into this business, it used to be I had to have 5 years experience before I could go anywhere. Now they're hiring kids straight out of college to work at networks or with limited experience working at networks. And after they have the experience, they boot them out for somebody cheaper. That's because back in the 80s, they allowed companies to buy each other up. The competition shrunk. The notes came due. What's the most expedient thing to do when you're a businessman? Well, let's get rid of some overhead. I need the cameras. I need this. Let's get rid of the people that cost me money. I can hire people cheaper. It's short-sightedness, and chickens are coming home to roost. The problem in the press today is you don't have people of any gravitas in positions where they demand gravitas.
So what you're saying is that in Ronald Reagan's administration in the 1980s,
that's when it began. But every president since then has none of them are innocent of destroying the First Amendment.
So due to his deregulation of the media, you saw a rise of syndicated press, which meant that you needed fewer people.
No, we saw a rise in press companies buying each other out.
And fewer individuals generating local news.
No, fewer individuals generating all news.
Mm-hmm.
International, national, state, and local.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for a newspaper when I first got in the business, it was generally considered one of the 10 best in the country year after year, the Courier Journal and Louisville Times. When Gannett bought it, they closed the Louisville Times, the afternoon paper. They shut down bureaus all over the U.S. and a few they had in other countries. There used to be, today, when you have a newspaper covering the federal government, they'll cover the executive branch, the legislative and judicial branch. You might have a half a dozen reporters. Back in the day, you had as many as, two or three reporters covering Congress, the House, two or three covering the Senate, more.
Could you provide some examples of the implications of these phenomena? So you see a decrease in the
press. Do you see who was elected president?
So you think, are you...
Lack of knowledge contributes to ignorance. Ignorance brings about fear and hatred. Fear and hatred and racism bring about Donald Trump. This is 35 years of ignorance and deregulation coming home to roost.
So what's the difference between today versus when you speak of the heyday of journalism, maybe the 1970s? There was still racism.
There's never been a heyday for journalism. Let me be honest. The problems are no different today in journalism than during H.L. Mencken's time when he said the only way to look at a politician is down and that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American electorate. The simple fact of the matter is a lot of people don't like to be educated. They live in their philosophical cul-de-sac and they never want to get out. The difference today is instead of providing news that you can use, we're providing news that plays to what you want to hear. So you stay in your philosophical cul-de-sac and you can get the slant or the taint in news that you want
without ever having to bother to look at real facts.
Well, how should news proceed to continue providing a public service?
If you have to break up the monopolies, and you have... That's the big thing. You're going to have to break up the monopolies and create more competition. There's not going to be any decent reporting done until there are more reporters out there.
Through the Federal Trade Commission?
You got to break... Look, man, I'm talking Teddy Roosevelt trust busting.
Mm-hmm.
Period. I don't care if it comes to the FTC, an executive decree, Congress, we do it now. Mm-hmm. Break it up.
So AOL, Time Warner would be a company, for instance, that you'd like to see broken into subsidiaries.
And yeah, AOL, Time Warner ought to be closed, but otherwise, yeah, break it up into about six different entities. You shouldn't be able
to... Like what happened to AT&T, basically.
Exactly.
Or Standard Oil.
Exactly.
Okay. And that would be good for the health of the American press.
It'd be good for the health of the American press. It'd be good for the health of the American Republic. It'd be good for health in general.
Now, why is that not happening today?
Because there's too much money. Why do you think it isn't happening today? Why did it take forever to bust up Standard Oil? Why? Because there's a boatload of money, and guess what? We're giving out free advertising to the very guy who is now decrying, you know, that we're a bunch of crooks.
So let's go back to the life of Brian Karam for a moment.
Why? That's boring.
You're now the editor of a newspaper, of actually two newspapers. Editor-in-chief, what is it that led you here? How did you, from high school to college to whatever you did afterwards, how did you become a champion of the free press? How is it that you came to a point in life where you were willing to go to jail in order to protect the rights of informants? What is it that led to you being where you are today?
Well, I tried to be a bank robber, but it just didn't pay out. I don't know. I wanted to be a writer. I went to University of Missouri, studied journalism. Got a job out of college down in Texas. I was the editor-in-chief of my high school newspaper. I worked for networks, radio, covered the Gulf War for NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Fox and was at America's Most Wanted. Got really tired of interviewing parents of dead kids. And did a 180-degree about-face when my father got cancer and quit and started working for Playboy and writing books. I wrote about six or seven books. And my
what sort of books did you write?
Mostly true crime. One of them is short stories and essays. One of them was about the problems of low self-esteem. I wrote that with a doctor in New Jersey, who had a theory about how low self-esteem leads to drug abuse and drug dependence and abuse.
Did you approach the books, the nonfiction books, in a journalistic vein?
Yeah, of course. It's the only way to address them.
So I know there was a movie about the book In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. Would you say he described a crime that actually happened in the course of a book? Is that somewhat analogous to yours? And if so...
Yeah, those are true crime. That's true crime genre.
So what's the difference between writing a book on true crime versus writing news on true crime?
The amount of time that it takes to write. I mean, you know...
Is the story and style similar?
Well, you're telling a story. A book gives you far more room to expand and investigate and flesh out the things that you can on a daily basis.
Are there different markets for one versus the other?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, newspapers are a market. Television is a market. True crime books are its own market. And there are a lot of people out there that love to read true crime novels.
How is the audience of people who loves to read true crime novels, is that audience different than, the same than, or overlapping with
overlapping.
The audience that likes to read newspapers?
Yeah, it's overlapping.
Okay, so why did you write those books?
For the money, of course. Why else? To feed my family. I'm a writer. I didn't want to, work on a daily basis while I was taking care of my dad. And we were raising kids, and I thought it would be nice to be around my children as they were growing up. Then when my oldest went to high school and they presented me with a fat, you know, bill to go to a private high school here locally, I decided I needed to make some more money. And so I talked to the people here at the Sentinel. I've been here ever since.
So you returned to journalism while
continuing. I never left journalism. I mean, I wrote for Playboy magazine and did the.
Was that fun?
Yeah.
Different?
It was far more different than interviewing parents of dead kids. I did a Playboy interview with James Carville and one with Gordon Liddy and Mary Matlin. And so I did a lot of political stuff.
So those three individuals that you listed are political pundits and strategists from the 1990s, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrote political news for Playboy magazine.
Well, I did the Playboy interview. Okay. And, you know, 20 questions and things like that.
Interesting. So, so you've been doing journalism your whole life. What is it? And you said you were brought back to Montgomery County because of your family.
No, I moved here in the 90s. I was working with an NBC affiliate in Texas, and that was where I went to jail. And after I got out of jail and covered the Gulf War, I was covering a presidential press conference. Seven nations were in San Antonio, Texas, to talk about how they were going to end the scourge on, you know, how they were going to end the war on drugs. And I had been covering crime for quite a while, and a lot of DEA agents said it was a bunch of baloney, that you couldn't end the war on drugs, that it would never work.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to ask our president that question during the news conference. He got a little upset with me, and I said, well, look, answer the question. He wouldn't answer the question, and the president from Mexico answered the question. And so I went back to my office. Who even knows? It wasn't even, you know, he answered it, but it was a perfunctory answer. And went back to my office, and I was told, good job. You have to really, these are dog and pony shows, way to ask the question. And then the next day I was summarily fired for being rude to the president. And as I sat in my living room in Texas, Sam Donaldson called me up and asked me if we could, Sam Donaldson, who used to work for ABC News, Sam Donaldson, with, you know, very famous reporter, asked if he could, do an interview with me. And I said, yeah. And then the next call I got was from someone saying they had a real need for an arrogant, obnoxious investigative reporter, and would I be willing to do it? And I said, Mom, is that you? And turned out it was, America's Most Wanted. And so they moved me here in 93, and I've been here ever since. So,
what is it that you love about journalism? What gets you going in the morning?
I suppose I like sticking it to the man. I suppose I don't like hypocrisy. I suppose what it is I want real information. I want facts. I want to provide it to him. I don't think anybody is above the law. I don't think anybody is above the need to know. I don't look upon the people who service in government as leaders. I look at them as civil servants, and they're responsible to us. My taxes pay their salary, so I feel they work for us. And when people work for me, I want answers.
How have you evolved?
And I love a good story.
It sounds like you've often loved a good story, and you've been passionate throughout your career. I was wondering if you could take a moment to articulate how you think you have evolved professionally as a journalist over the course of your career. Are you any different now than you were when you began your career?
I weigh more. I've lost a little hair. No, the struggle continues as far as evolving. I've become a better writer. I always had a high BS detector because, you know, I come from a legal family. My grandfather was a circuit court judge. My uncles all served in the legislature. My dad sold cars for a living, and I'm a reporter, so we're all full of baloney. So I have a high, you know, ability to detect that. I think...
Which legislature did they serve in?
It was in Kentucky. I think it's important. What I've come to realize is that that there is no doubt that this country needs a free and independent press. And there is no doubt that it is underappreciated, underutilized, underfinanced, and by the people who own it, completely held with contempt and disregard. They don't care. The people who own it, it's another property. And it's just a way to squeeze money out of it. How do you squeeze money out of CBS, NBC, General Electric? All these people, they don't care. They just want money. They're bottom line oriented. Bean counters have taken over the world, and some of us have to fight against that.
So as you, we're nearing the end of the podcast here, and so as you reflect on your career.
Hopefully I'm not dying. Hopefully I'm still in my career.
To date, I'd like to ask, you know, for you to talk a little bit about the impact you've had and the legacy that you leave to date.
Who knows?
Why journalism is better or why our democracy has been stronger because you've been here.
Well, hell, I don't know. I'm just doing my job, man. I mean, I think that's pompous as all get out for someone to say, well, I've been important. Maybe in the scheme of things, you haven't been important, but you try to make a difference.
So, why?
Because everyone wants to leave. I would hope that everyone wants to leave the world in a little better condition than they found it.
Now, this has been such a tough journey for you in the sense that not only have you gone to prison, but you say it's becoming increasingly tougher to actually uphold the First Amendment, maintain a strong free press, and there's increasing pressure politically and economically on you to reduce the size of the free press and eventually to get out. Why have you not left for an easier career path in, for instance, public relations? Why have you stayed true to your original intent when you became a journalist?
Because money isn't what it's all about. I'm a stubborn SOB, and I'll be the last guy to turn the lights out when they close it down.
So that has been Brian Karam, who is the editor of the Sentinel newspapers in Montgomery County and Prince George's County, Maryland. He speaks about, you know, trying to make a difference by giving people access to information. And information that is ideally more objective and less biased and with less spin than they might otherwise get, whether they want it or not, because he perceives the health of our democracy, our republic, as he says, to be largely dependent, or at least affected by, a free and independent press. And what he hopes to do through the course of his career is to ensure that, to the best of his abilities, the public is informed, especially about government, and that the role of a government watchdog shall be forever upheld in a free and independent press as long as Brian Karam has a say. So thank you so much for joining us. This has been episode 65 of Public Interest Podcast, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Thank you, Brian, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we will talk to you next time.
Have a bourbon.